from the groups, not from the individual GSRs. If we did service more in line with that, we wouldn't have this out of control nonsense that we see. Because, you know, you have to ask yourself, okay, the conference keeps saying that it's fellowship approved because all the regional reps voted on it. I can't believe it. I mean, I can't believe that what is making a lot of regional reps from NA go, you know, deciding these things. So I would assume they're misinformed when they get there, or they don't know all the facts and are being, you know, taken off to the side and told, well, this is, you know, this was why it will be so good for NA, so you should vote this way. You know, it's like a political party, you know. I'm really getting, there's some other people here that could answer questions too. I don't want to be like the person who knows all the answers, because I really don't.
Yeah, I will make a...
The first thing I need to say is what we're doing right now is we're leaving the letter, okay? Basically, we're going into the 1980 conferences from 1980 to now, which basically is a basic era where Fawn has not been involved. She went to the point where she could answer the questions on her up to her involvement. And to go any further with that there is basically be another section this year later when we go over the conference through the 80s after the basic tech stuff. You go through that process, literature process. And we have people here like myself, Bo, Forrest, that have been involved in World Service Conference for, you know, an extreme period of time during the 80s that can better facilitate them type of questions. And, you know, that's a real extreme period of emotional growth and maybe lack of growth at times that we've gone through. And that's some of the stuff we're going to get into later in this agenda. And if any questions need to be asked, it's reference to the letter or that should be it. And should be it. And I think we've gone beyond that at this moment. Okay? And I think Fawn did a real great job, and I think she did a beautiful job for us last night. And they're going to bring lunch in here, and what we want to do next is go into the basic text stuff next, the literature process itself, and which I think is real important, because Fawn alluded to some things that I believe made it possible for early literature stuff was open committee stuff, and that stuff will be shared in the openness of our literature process in the early days, which I was introduced to. You know, and that's going to be real valuable information. And I just think we owe Fawn another an applause and thank her, you know, for you know, I'm in gratitude for her participation here. And I think we'll close up for lunch. So if you want to go have a cigarette quick, go have a cigarette and then come back in. We'll have lunch in this room.
My name's Bone. I'm an addict. Hey, everybody. Well, I'm glad to be here, and part of me doesn't want to be here. And I tried to say my prayers a while ago. And what I'm going to do is try not to play it smart. And, you know, I really think the pickle that we're in today is only going to be healed when a succession of members come out of the hole and speak the truth. And then there'll be some good in that and some harm in that. But at least it'll be real, and it'll be a real we can live with and carry on. And I'm not afraid, and I'm not saying this with any sense of embarrassment or like negative anticipation, but you know, we've grown a lot, and we exist as a fellowship under a set of pressures and financial concerns and legal considerations and interactive boards that may at times either forget they're directly responsible or it's hard to see how they believe they're directly responsible based on their actions. And I've been, I guess I served at World for about 10 or 11 years. I was probably involved at World probably like 12 years. And the last year and a half, I've held no elected position in Narcotics Anonymous, and I sort of feel like an alumni or something, you know? Like I'm still involved and I still play a role, but not in any official capacity, nor do I wish to. I mean, I feel like I'm lucky to have escaped with my life, my clean time, my sense of humor, and my faith. And gotten to see the miracles that took place, because I was very, 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 very spoiled. All of us were. We were very, very fortunate. You know, going back to what I originally said, though, just like about winging it, see, the chance is if I made a series of intended, carefully prepared statements, then it might come off better to you people, but then I might miss out some ambient thought that God might put in my mind, and then that might trigger some good thing in you. So I'd rather go for the ambient thought. Of course, we can also cover some other more like technically correct ground. I'm also glad, and this is something I thought about in the last few weeks coming up on this, I'm glad that I don't hold any elective position. I'm glad that I am not seeking any elective position, because for years, I mean, I had to function under constraints. Like one way I would phrase my membership on the Board of Trustees was I'm required to do many things, and there's certain things I cannot do. And functioning within those constraints, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of change just from being a using addict to a clean addict. But there was, I got used to reading that much paper a month. I started losing my eyesight. I was out of town 30 out of 50 weekends last year. I was in World Services. And what was killing me was I felt like a lot of money was getting spent on me and wasn't doing people no good. It started tearing me up inside and making me feel guilty. So I'm glad I'm out. And the other nice spin-off is I can, you know, come and meet with members of the fellowship like we're doing today and share things, you know, in hopes that it'll help others. We got a lot of help. One thing, and, you know, just kind of picking up on some of the things that Fawn was sharing and some of the things Doug shared in his letter, we came into the picture in the middle 70s. We were East Coast. There was no meetings of Narcotics Anonymous in Atlanta, Georgia when I got clean. I had tried to start Narcotics Anonymous in 1971. I had spent three more years out there. This buddy of mine had gotten in AA, so at the end of one of my marriages, I went to see my buddy Jim and his wife Rachel, and sure enough, they were there. And then a month later, they announced and started holding this NA meeting. And by then, I didn't even want to go. But, you know, I guess I was curious. And then I was back at that meeting every Friday night for 5 years. And, you know, I noticed there was something real special about that meeting out of all the other meetings I was going to. And I guess there was something special, too, about the way the AAs treated me, because I didn't sit and say I'm an alcoholic or anything. I said, my name's Bo and I'm an acid head. You know, or my name's Bo and I'm a speed freak. And I would notice the people at the close of the meeting, some of them would jump up with this one expression on their face and run over the room towards me, and others would jump and intercept them. And I think the interceptors intercepted them because they knew I wasn't kidding and I was sincere. And I guess that's why. And but anyway, every time at an NA meeting, then I would, you know, stop going to an AA meeting, and then there were 7 meetings a week in Atlanta, and then I haven't been back to AA for recovery in a long time, like 13 years. And I celebrated my 16th anniversary last Tuesday. Thank you. And, you know, but there are addicts in AA, and those addicts in AA helped me. And the alcohol addicts in AA, the ones that were sincere, understood, and they helped me. And, you know, when it came to the basic text, they helped me, because this one guy says, well, as long as you stick to what you actually experience, nobody in the world can say you're wrong. The instant you drift off into theory or conjecture, almost anybody can pick you apart. So when I got elected World Lit Chair and was able to spearhead the movement, I repeated that to people. And in open committee, I'd say, just stay away from them good ideas and stuff, you know. Keep it a real, addict, clean recovery experience. So that was our constant yardstick, and that's what we held up. That was the measure. Any piece of input, we'd hold it up to that yardstick. And if it didn't stack up in terms of addict experience, it didn't get in the basic text, even though it might sound neat as a pen. You know, we didn't want any cool lines that would kill. And, you know, there were other, you know, small but important things. Some of the goodwill was important. I guess leaving that thing on AA for a moment. It's real impressive to me, considering the monstrous nature of our disease, how much they were able to do before we finally started growing. How much good, and how much love, and how much gentleness, and how much mutual respect. Of course, they had to earn their stripes, and it didn't come easy. And of course, we are having to earn our stripes, and of course, it ain't coming easy. So I hope that, does that mean you want me to speak up? Okay. Just checking. So anyway, I bought these picture books. They're like sort of family albums, but y'all can look at them. Just don't steal no pictures, please. Anyway, I guess if you're going to hear about lit workers, it might do to see some. There are a lot of other shots in there, but, you know, they're just a mess in the drawer, so I just stuck them all in those books. Anyway, I had had a little bit of college. I had been born like, you know, one of those families like you see on TV where this part of the family's got the millions and millions of dollars, and then there's the poor relatives. Well, that was like me. But I knew some of my uncles and so forth, and I knew that, you know, money just never impressed me worth a damn, not in and of itself. And I was on like this sort of quest for answers. I mean, I went to coffee houses, beatniks. I can remember the first time I heard the word hippie. I used to have hair longer than anybody in this room. And had a gold earring, and then somebody said, no, gypsies put it on their other ear, so I had to pierce the other ear to be cool. Okay, I'm trying to give some of my background, because it was, and the beatniks put a lot of sort of like respect for generic spirituality. I mean, it'd be Hinduism, and then Zen Buddhism, and then just Buddhism, and then reading about Jack Kerouac's On the Road, and then something about Catholicism, or Judaism, or Christianity, or Mohammedanism. I run into a feller last year that gave me almost the entire Koran on cassette tapes in Arabic and English, and listened to it all. He was a Saudi national. So, and I was still that way. So I was like hungry to know and this, that, and the other. So the lie that went down, and Sheriff Hengisto at the 7th World Convention in San Francisco said, and he did the official welcome, because in those days they would get like some prestigious personality to do an official welcome to the city, to the World Convention for Narcotics Anonymous, for among. So Sheriff Hengisto says, lies, he went into the power of lies, and he says, they used to burn witches at the stake because they rode around on bone sticks and because they caused little babies to die and stuff like that, and then they'd burn them at the stake. And he said, you guys are today's witches, and you get burned at the stake every day. And it was impressive to me to hear the sheriff of San Francisco saying this. And then later that weekend, you know, I was from Georgia in San Francisco, right? And in those days, in 1977, there were very few members from the East Coast Fellowship in San Francisco. And I would sort of try to play it cool, and that they'd been telling us, and we'd been repeating, addicts in recovery can't write. And so we believed what we were told, and we kept repeating that until one day we started questioning it, like, what do you mean by that? They haven't tried writing, or they've tried and they can't write well, or they don't write much, or what do you mean exactly? Because, you know, when you think about it, there have always been addicts, and some of the addicts were writers and musicians and painters, and I'd been a beatnik, so, I mean, I wanted to know what this was, you know, the deep inner meaning of this phrase we'd been repeating was. And finally I got the answer in San Francisco. It means that they've never tried, at least not on any scale. And then there were these rumored pieces of input for the basic text that were supposed to exist. It may still exist, but I just never found them. And I started asking people at the World Convention, just in the hallways, like, who can I talk to find out who's working on our book so we can help them? You know, I'm from Georgia, da-da-da. Hey, here's the guy from Georgia, you know. He wants to know about who's working on our book. So they introduced me to one and then another, you know. And I was getting tired of asking my question, but finally I met the chairperson of the Board of Trustees. And, you know, and you bet your sweet ass I held on. And so that was Greg. And the interesting thing that happened was he would go this way and I would go that way with him. But then, lo and behold, I could go this way and he'd go that way with me. So somehow we were connected. So we played this game around the hotel for the next 4 or 5 hours, and finally we surrendered to the fact we really were going to talk about, you know, what was going on with the basic text. So we went up to his room, and he showed me, I think, about 15, 20 pages written by George S. on the steps. And it was NA material, and it was on the steps. It was written by an addict, and it was fairly good stuff, some of which is in the basic text today. And, you know, and outside of this one guy, the big trouble, they'd even sent out a mock letter from WSO saying, like, there's a movement underway to write the NA basic text, and we've already got plenty of input, send us some more. It was like one of those ad gimmicks, you know, like, don't miss your chance. And they couldn't get nothing in there. I mean, it was just pitiful. I'm going to take my watch off so I don't get weak and worry about what time it is, because that really shouldn't be important. We've waited long enough to share. So, anyway, then later he gets to talk and he says, well, you know, you could come down to Los Angeles with me and spend a couple of days, and I'll take you one of the oldest NA meetings in the world. You go by WSO. Would you like that? I said, no, I better get on home. You know, we got some work to do and so forth. So, you know, I gave in and come around and was down there 3 or 4 days and did get to go all those places and met Jimmy for the first time, which we'd talked on the phone, written some letters. And like one question from the hotel room was like, who can help with the basic text? And he says, any member. And I says, really? And he said, yeah, really, any member. I say, that's pretty interesting considering no one has. I mean, you know, we talked some more and went on. And, I just remembered. See, well, I'll get to this in a minute. But I had forgotten that I had written some stuff before I ever went out there because of some of my weirdo background. Like, I wasn't afraid. I mean, I did a mock four-step even though I knew it was stupid when I was 6 months. Because I figured I'll just write a mock four-step. Because, like, what's the harm, you know? Nobody's even going to know unless I, like, tell them, you know? And it may be a good laugh later on, you know, good practice. And God, people were scared of that step in the old days. And so, anyway, I'd gotten carried away. And I'd written, a chapter outline thing and what the hell else, maybe a few notes, but anyway, I showed that to Greg. But between San Francisco and leaving LA 3 or 4 days later, I said, well, I'm gonna write some stuff and send it in. I'll try to get some other people too, and then you're in World Services, you route the stuff to whoever's working on it. And history update here. 1970, 3 to 5, the NHRE was written. 1976, the first conference was attempted, and I think there were a couple of people there. 1977, the second conference was attempted, and one member showed up. This was at the World Convention in Northern California, in San Francisco. The one member that showed up for the World Service Conference was from Southern California. The Northern California RSR didn't even show. That's how grim it was in those days. We were very small in those days. And so anyway, structurally, for me as an average member to agree to write something and send it in, there was really no other place to send it to. There was no executive committee of the WSC, exactly, I don't think. But there was only one RSR that showed up. So there was hardly a functional lit committee to send it to. So the board would be the only place a member could have sent it to in those days. So anyway, I said, you know, hell, I'll write something, send it in, and then it'll probably be awful, but it'll encourage somebody else to write something. And there were more dreamy times later on, but that was like the beginning. So I got home, and, you know, I had rigorously worked on my steps, and I viewed all this stuff as, like, holy and just surrounded with the yellow light and stuff like that. And I would sit down and try to pretend like it. Oh, I know. Before I had gone out there, I wrote my story at a meeting on a Sunday on the 4th of July, and nobody else showed up, so I made the coffee and sat the literature and then wrote my story and sent it to WSO. And so I would do that some more, except we have a lot of topic discussion meetings in Georgia, so I would just write like on a topic like resentment skill or spiritual principles or honesty or whatever. And I'd just hold forth for a page or two or three, and then that was it. And I'd go on another topic. And just kind of make, you know, try to get in a state of mind like I was at a meeting and I was sharing with other members, which I was used to doing, and then I'd just, like, write on it. Okay, and what this did was, and then I had 30, 40 pages, so I went to Zayers and spent $50 and bought myself a little plastic typewriter. And typed it up. So I wrote Greg this, you know, and sent him the typed copies. Of course, the letter line was a little like that, but you could read them. And I found it was different on the typewriter because my thoughts would come clear. And I mean, along with addiction, I'm probably dyslexic and all other kind of crap that I refuse to even consider. You know, I've got enough diseases. But, you know, it was legible and it got out there. And so a whole year went by and I had sent him about 60 pages and I had another 30 or 40. It was time for the next World Convention. So, I hate to hog the show on what I'm sharing right now, but I mean, there was nobody else writing it all anywhere. So a year later, and I was trying, I was beginning to learn how to encourage other members within the structure and the spiritual boundaries. So a year later, I flew down to New Orleans and met Greg there, and we went out and made photocopies of some of this other stuff I had written, and we talked about it. And then we flew over to Houston to the World Convention there. And I'll never forget one night, the man that's now my sponsor was sharing on the history of Narcotics Anonymous from the podium. And I was out in the back of the room, but I heard, I don't know if I heard the whole thing or not, but if any of y'all have heard Bob D. Houston, that's the history I'm talking about. And one of the things he says is that, and about the basic text, who knows where the basic text is going to come from? Maybe from one of you newcomers walking in the door today. And like, I'm in the back of the room, you know, and you know what I've been doing for the last year. And, you know, I knew a little bit about the impasse right then. You know, the psychology was that, you know, the esteemed old-timers in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, they're just like self-effacing, humble people, and they're so spiritual. None of them wants to make the first move, but eventually they'll write our basic text because they're so cool and we're so fucked up. And now the flip side of the coin is World Services really was kind of noble and wise and cool by then. And, you know, I perceived them as esteemed old-timers and beloved old-timers and people I could go to with problems and hurting and really trust and get good answers from Chuck Skinner, from Jimmy Cannon, from Cliff Craft, from Dennis McGoffrin, from Bob Barrett. And they were like friends, and they were totally 100%. See, they had gone through a period like we're going through for 20 years of no basic text. You know, took them a long time, just took a long time to get the little white booklet. Took them a long time to get the office. So they was, by then, they was grateful for whatever they got. See? And they were together on their story, and they were 100% sold on Narcotics Anonymous and its principles. And they didn't give us an ambiguous message. I mean, clean and sober was a prevalent phrase in those days, but beyond that, I mean, they were solid on NA and solid on membership and solid on building Narcotics Anonymous. And that's what they transferred to people like me. So, anyway, I just bided my time because, you know, if you're on good spiritual ground, the world will come to you. You don't have to go to it. Just wait for the right time to come. So, sure enough, Bob got done with his history workshop, and I just waited by the door, and along comes Bob, and I says, can I see you for a minute? And so he says, well, sure, what's up? And he had already said on the sharing, he says, well, when somebody asked me about the book, I said, what have you done to help with the book? So he says, I want to talk to you about the book. And he says, what have you done to help with the book? And I says, I've got 100 pages up in Greg's room. Want to see them? And he went like, oh, I got to get washed up first. I said, can I wait with you? So he got washed up, and we went on up to Greg's room. And he took a look at it. And I don't think a dozen people in the world have read what was in between the index finger and the thumb, but at least an addict wrote it, you know. And he sat down and looked at it and all. And so the next thing that happened, I think, you know, besides us all going home, was I think a few months later, Jimmy asked me to write a letter about the work going on with the basic text, and so I did. And that was mailed out from WSO with literature orders to the fellowship. And I said, why do you want me to write this letter? And he says, we just do, that's all. And I says, well, I'm not elected to do that, and I don't think it'd be proper. And he says, it's okay, you're on the WSO Lit Committee, plus the Board of Trustees Lit Committee. And I said, am I really? You know, I didn't know that. And so he says, nevertheless, you are. And so finally, I agreed to write the letter. And I think, well, I didn't plan this, but I think I'm going to read that. Why not? Other things have been read. Oh, God, can I find it? Yep, found it. Okay, dear members, several NA members and groups around the country have begun the work that we hope will result in the creation of our definitive text. We need an original book combining the basics of our program with 50 to 100 stories of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. We need a book that tells in detail what we have learned over the years about the problems faced by newcomers. Would you read this for me? I get a little fucked up at times like this.
Dear members, several NA members and groups around the country have begun the work that we hope will result in the creation of our definitive text. We need an original book combining the basics of our program with 50 to 100 stories of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. We need a book that tells us in detail what we have learned over the years about the problems faced by newcomers and old-timers alike. Of course, there is a wealth of resource material available from other programs, but it will always be there, and we really need some of our own. Articles relating the experience of recovery in general, how we successfully face our problems in everyday living, and how we actually work our steps will contribute directly to the development of our book. We have only to tell it like it is. If this sounds like a big deal, it is. Our newcomers and groups in isolated areas don't know what to do in many cases, and too many have floundered and died out. If we can combine our love and strength in this effort, we can give them many of the answers we have found for ourselves and other groups. Many addicts are reluctant to write, but in practically every area where there are NA meetings, there are some who can help if encouraged to do so by fellow members. Without encouragement, they often hold back from fear of ego or simply because they don't know the need. We want our book to be as complete as possible and truly representative of NA as a whole. This means that we need input from you and your help encouraging and supporting others. Those who have already begun this work have found that fear of self drops quickly away. We have found that our higher power once more does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. We need only offer ourselves, and we will be used in this service. We realize that some will be skeptical about this effort, but we're really not doing this for selfish reasons. People who could be helped are dying every day from our disease. A book telling the story of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous would make our program more available to them. A few of us can't do it alone. We need your help. Please send your stories, articles, and other input to World Service Office Literature Committee, 391 Cranville Street, Marietta, Georgia, 360. In this way, all input can be made available to the various members and groups working on this project. If you also wish to make your name and address available to those working on the literature development, please notify us by mail. Rest assured that a working manuscript based on your experience and the experience of others who contribute will be circulated within the fellowship prior to publication. Daniel McGee, Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, I'm Daniel, by the way. Anyway, I get criticized sometimes for being like intellectual and dealing with things on a mental level or something. But really is, probably this is another disease, right? But I just get like overwhelmed by my feelings. And so I've learned to just, like in a crisis, if this building was to fall in, I would figure out a remedy or a way to get out with the maximum number of people alive. I'm great in crises. It'll hit me 4 or 5 hours later, you know, but when it happens, I'm cool as a cucumber, apparently. But there's a lot of stuff happening inside. But reading that stuff or thinking about how beautiful those days was, it's just like overwhelming because it wasn't a daydream. It all happened, and that's the way it was. We wanted it good, so it was good. And anyway, as a result of that letter, things happened like the members that received that in Australia started sending in input. We found out there were meetings in places like Barcelona and Calcutta. I don't think they ever sent any in. I think Germany was always on the mail list. I can't remember them sending anything. I know Australia sent written material and a cassette tape or two. But they weren't just welcomed in a tokenistic manner. I mean, anything they sent in was taken as seriously by us as if it was somebody across the street or somebody within the continental United States. And the letters back were as friendly because I'd read some of that Dale Carnegie stuff, and you know, we'd get like one little piece of input from somebody, and we wouldn't give them like a Joe College rah 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 letter, but it was just like as sincere as we could put it, and we really appreciate your input, and please write some more, and thank you so much, and here's how it's going, and try to write deliberately, intentionally write a letter so good back to them that they would be embarrassed and send us more input. And you know, it worked. They would. We'd just thank them until they believed it, you know. And then they'd send some more input. Because we had to keep the faith, because we knew we were building basically a spiritual movement. And, you know, you just can't break the faith. You just can't. You can do a lot of things, but don't break the faith. And so we won these people's hearts. And they would workshop stuff and write input. And I'd be talking to them on the phone. I'd say, well, have you sent anything in yet? And they'd say, no, but I'm getting these other people too. And I said, they ain't going to send nothing in. And they'd say, why? And I'd say, because you didn't. They're not going to do it if you hadn't done it. And they'd go like, well, okay, I will. But you know, like part of our disease is that we want everybody else to do what we ought to do. And then they won't do it, so they're fucked up, and you know, of course we're okay, right? And you know, it's a game that goes around. But anyway, once they had sent in their contribution, then were capable of getting other people to do it. They said, look, I sent mine in, you can send yours in. Well, you think you're better than me? And then they, well, I'll send something then. You know, and we just continued this. I mean, along with all the other things that we were doing, I chaired the World Convention in Atlanta in 79. My second child was born 2 days after the World Convention. My wife dreams that year of going to the World Convention as chair with my wife pregnant out to here and getting called away. You just have to get somebody else to chair the convention. I got to go to the hospital. I'm just saying it was like busy times, but we kept putting out these letters and kept getting the input and trying to respond promptly with good letters and getting more input. And then the West Coast wasn't believing about the input. They weren't getting it. I'd say like 300 pages. And that didn't work, so I'd say like 3 stories and 15 articles. And that wouldn't work, so I finally got down to pounds. I said, we now have 10 pounds. And I don't think they bought it, but they thought, well, like, pounds? What do you mean, pounds? And finally, we just, you know, we had, I think, about 800 pages going into Lincoln, Nebraska. And that letter went out in the spring, so I went to conference that year, and I guess basically on the strength of recommendations of old-timers that I'd met, and like Fawn was saying, newcomers voted in those days. But, well, it wasn't just like, oh, you're a member of NA, nice that you're here, you too have a vote. It was more like if you're the one member, like if five members came from Texas, one would vote. If one member came from Arizona, one would vote. If one member came from New Jersey, one would vote. One member came from New Jersey, voted, and moved to L.A. without ever having gone home, which was good because he had charges on him, and if he had gone home, he wouldn't have come back for a few years. And so I got elected World Lit Chair, and that was all, like, real heavy. I can remember, you know, like, up to that point, you know, like, World Services was a miracle, and, oh, those people at the office are so cool, and, oh, those trustees are so cool, and all these conference officers and stuff. I mean, you know, I wasn't ragged out on it, but it was rather neat. And, you know, it's neat to be in California. So, like, when you get elected to chair, I should take this microphone down, like, prance around a little bit. Chair of the World Lit Committee. You know, good to meet you. Yes, you can touch me. And I mean, it's like, hey. And I mean, like, deep in the heart of your recovery, you know there's a lie, right? But, you know, then I got to think about all them people dying and shit like that, and kind of brought me back down to earth. And, you know, the long, long time we've gone with so many doing so little, and so rarely, and you know, and I kind of got back on the track. Me and Greg talked about, like, if we can just get some input coming in, and then if we have a solid positive response, if we keep faith with the people, then there'll be more input and then more response, and then we'll have to get together somehow and have like a work session or something, probably like a conference, and then we'll figure out a way to make material and start putting it into a topic outline or book form or something. I mean, that was sort of like what the dream was like. But as this stack of poundage grew from several ounces to several feet, I mean, yeah, about, it started becoming a lot more real to us, you know, that, like, this is not just a joke. I mean, like, this is real stuff, you know, and it don't go away. It's there on Monday. It's still there on Tuesday. And it may still be there on Friday. And we had to, like, push ourselves in the future and say, well, like, what would we do if we had one of these big conference things? What could we do? And we talked about that the year I was elected, and I was learning some World Service savvy and group conscience, so I just put it on the group. I thought, wherever y'all would like to have the World Lit Conference is where it will be. Y'all just make your bids or something, because we've done the World Convention, you bid for it, right? So they went for it, and they picked this San Francisco or this place or Atlanta or Wichita, and Wichita got it. Well, I was happy as a duck. I didn't give a rat's ass where it was, you know, just as long as it was someplace that I could get to. And Wichita was fine, because that's between the East and the West Coast, so talk about neutral ground, huh? And people that had to fly or drive in, you know, sort of fair. Wichita's out there in the middle. And, but, you know, we finally got there, and, input was still coming in, the letters of thanks were still going out. Our guidelines consisted, I think, of one sentence, WSC organizational chart, officers. Huh? Are we back on yet? To collect, compile, and review material prior to presentation to the WSC, or the fellowship, for approval. One sentence. And so what we wanted to talk about at Wichita was a plan of action. Okay, we've got some input, we've got some people interested. You know, our little World Service Conference is, you know, got subcommittee chairs and more RSRs this year than last year. Things are doing better. You know, more. I think the entire gross sales of WSO in 1978-79 was like less than $10,000. And but we were growing. And so when we got to Wichita, I opened the conference with these words: well, now we're here, what are we going to do? And we went around the room, and you expressed like your opinion of what would be good to do and what we were capable of doing. And so by the time we'd made the rounds, we like formulated what we was going to take on and try to accomplish during this 3-day conference. And out on the Great Plains, or wherever Wichita is. It sure felt funny being out there. But it was sort of like a shopping center and then a little place down the lower level. And you park your car and you could walk in. And the Chamber of Commerce had offices in there and community groups could rent them out. So it wasn't a lot of space, but it was reasonably okay. And we had copy machines and good typewriters. And Oh, they were just there. I mean, they were there from the Chamber of Commerce. They were just like part of the deal. And that's okay, asking questions, because we are a group. This is a spiritual service body. So anyway, what we settled on was discussing the different categories, like what is in a literature? Well, it can be a book, but it can also be pamphlets and IPs. It can also be newsletters. Well, how's the literature committee organized? How do you deal with the paperwork? How do you raise funds within traditions and service structure and all that? And see, this was absolutely not written down anywhere. I mean, there wasn't even another committee that had this stuff that we could, like, follow suit and copy their stuff and plug in our names. And so each workshop discussed these things, like, from the bottom up and left residue of minutes and notes and stuff. And so, you know, I'm not going to drag it out any more than that, but it was a good feeling there. The committees did their work well. The minutes of those committees were atrocious. I think one or two had a good set of minutes. And I spent all my time buzzing around from committee to committee. And occasionally we'd call together and talk about everything, kind of report to one another, and go back into the little workshops. I remember a funny moment in the back when they were talking about the fundraising thing, and the workers came up with the idea of actually putting it in there for fundraising purposes within our fellowship. How much is a human life worth? And that sort of struck me. I remember that striking me very hard at the moment. So anyway, we got home, and we had, you know, some paper. Hadn't looked at it too closely yet. And we left it there with Cliff H., and so I'm on the phone every few weeks. Hey, Cliff, how you doing? Yeah, weather's fine. How's the minutes coming along, Cliff? You know, because I promised him, you know, you will be sent a copy of the minutes and da-da-da. You know, registration was $12 or something. And like the weeks were going by, and I hadn't like done it yet, and it was like eating away at me, you know, and I'd keep calling Cliff up, being nice, and how's it coming, Cliff? How's it coming, Cliff? You know, a month or two goes by. Finally I said, Cliff, just send me the minutes. I'll get them typed here. You know, this is horrible. It's killing me. And he really didn't want to do that. He says, no, I can't do it. And I said, just tell me why. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm your buddy. Trust me. Just tell me why. He says, because I feel like a failure. I said, oh, come on. You're a trusted servant. What the hell? Where we come from? You got to be a huge successful man. Come on. And so he thought about it and like, oh, yeah, well, okay, I'll send him. So he did. And I got three separate excellent typist, secretary type people come to my place and take the minutes away, and they were going to type them up, and they didn't do it. And this is with that dum-da-dum-dum deadline approaching, you know, the 90-day deadline in those days for the WSC. It had to be in the mail 90 days before the conference to count, to even have a chance of approval. But this was mainly just minutes, right? And they were just being, you know, main thing was to get them out as soon after Wichita as we could. So these people kept bringing me back the damn minutes and untyped and embarrassed and funny looking. So I'm chair, and I'm assiduously trying to be chair, not secretary. Now, we'll not type them. But finally, I knuckles under, and I go looking in there, and I find out where nobody's typed them. I mean, like, one committee actually created a numeric code to where the minutes were a sequence of numbers relating to these topics. It was just, like, barbaric. And it really did make sense if you could dig it. The big question was, did you want to dig it that much or not? And, you know, those secretaries must have felt awful sorry for us. And then others were just sort of like rough, you know, but they were there, and one or two of them were like done very well. So I was really felt like I was up a tree. I had some cassette, I still have cassette tapes from Wichita, Lincoln, and Memphis. That's really Your Basic Text being written on cassette tape, and I tried when I was a trustee to get WSO to consider making a two-hour cassette out of it, because then you could hear Your Basic Text being written, and they wouldn't have nothing to do with it. But maybe someday. And so what I did was transpose it. And I tried to do it like minutes, because, you know, that's like minutes, right? You got like the header and then Roman numeral and then A and 1 and B and little big letters and little letters. And it was okay on some sections, but other sections, a lot of stuff was getting left out. So I thought, well, I'll just type it in roughly, because why the hell not, you know? Nobody's watching me. We're so late anyway. And in each section, I was just putting everything I remember from Wichita that was discussed and brought and talked about. Well, what happened then was, you know, I looked at it the next day, and it was making sense, but it seemed kind of dumb to, like, go back and try to put that into a topic outline form or, like, minutes. So God stepped in the form of a printer named Phil Page down there in Mayreta, and he says, you know, you could take that over to Maria Reaper Graphics, and they'd probably typeset it for $25. And I says, are you kidding, Phil? Why would they want to do that? He says, I could print it into a booklet. And I says, you could? I said, well, let me think about this. So I went home and called Greg and called this one and called the other one. I don't know how we were doing with our local lit committees in those days. There probably weren't very many. But anyway, we kicked it all around, and it seemed like this was a collection of all the thoughts and ideas that related to the NA Basic Text, plus newsletters and IPs, plus forming the committee even. Well, this is much more than minutes. And it'll still go out to people because it's got the same contents as the minutes. But we'll just put another cover page on it and call it the Handbook for NA Lit Committees. How's that, guys? Everybody said yes, so we did it. And got it typeset and printed. And I think we had to do the collating and folding and stapling ourselves. But that was okay. That's it. I called a ton of people up, and 50 or 60 people showed up, and we worked all evening one night and just sent out hundreds of them to anybody that we had an address on. And we were no longer worried about anything. Like, after the idea of it becoming a handbook, then approval became an issue. But then we realized it didn't really have to be approved to be a handbook because we were just going to use it internally. And then we were going to sell it for $2 to be a fundraising item to buy stamps and paper and stuff for World Lit and phone calls. But then it got approved at the conference, and it came out through WSO, so we didn't get nothing. But it was approved somehow, even though it didn't go through the 90-day process. We would just keep a straight face when things like happened those days and be grateful. And, you know, at least the plan of action to get a basic text plus newsletters plus these other things started, at least that was written, at least it was out there, at least it was doing some good. And that's a story how that came about. And I didn't think too much about who was going to be chairperson of the World Lit Committee the next year. Several people ran hard for it. My name was put in nomination. I thought, yeah, that's good. And then I got elected. And there had been some problems. Some IPs were supposed to go out that never went out. And I classed that as just some unfortunate things that happened, and it was just part of our early history. And it could have gone differently, but if it had, some other things wouldn't have been possible. Now, I was World Lit Chair, and we had a conference, and we were supposed to send out some IPs, but first, two people interested in literature from Marietta. But first, they had to be printed at WSO, and it was only the final forms that could be printed because they were changed, you know, minor word changes in conference. Well, I'd left those at Jimmy's house, and he had taken some gold and jewels out of this box he had in his bedroom and showed them to me. Then, when he took me to the airport, and I started to get photocopies, and I didn't get photocopies. So the only copy in the world was at his house. And he had stuck it away in that little jewelry box for most of that year and forgotten where it was. So for months I was calling him saying, well, you know, along with checking on the minutes after we'd done Wichita, you know, how's them IPs coming, you know? When are we going to see them IPs? Well, we never did see them IPs exactly. And I still never did. I never have seen the originals. But it was kind of interesting how God worked it, because they sort of damned me for not sending out these IPs. Like, that was one of your main things and you blew it. I went like, yeah, well, I did blow it. You know, but we'll get them out next year. As soon as WSO sends them to us. Of course, they never sent them to us, so they never went out. But it had the come to us, we would have sent them out just as we sent out some other stuff. Okay. And anyway, we planned another conference. The conference again pitched the site. The conference again voted on it. Again, I was well pleased with their choice. This time it was going to be in Lincoln, Nebraska, right after the World Convention in Wichita. Now the World Convention was following where the Lit Conferences were, somewhat. And so a lot of people showed up in Wichita for the World Convention, and then they went to Lincoln the next week. A bunch of them, like 25 or 30 of them, went to Lincoln the next week for the Lincoln Literature Conference. And that was set to run between like Tuesday and the following Sunday. So we left the World Convention on Sunday, went to Lincoln, and the lit conference started on Tuesday to run to Sunday. And then we had another year. A lot of local lit committees had been formed. I was world lit chair, so I found out I could get away with saying, well, I think any local lit chair should be a co-chair of world lit, and we should act accordingly. So I didn't know that that would be a good move. But what I didn't count on is members in service don't take their service efforts seriously if they're not taken seriously. And by making them co-chairs of World Lit and treating them like co-chairs, they come alive and start becoming capable of miracles. The basic text is evidence. And I had a checklist. I wrote a list of their names and phone numbers on my wall. And then the weeks of all of my term, and if I had contact with them, I put a check mark there, and then I could check the list, and if I hadn't heard from them that week, I'd call them up. So we'd stay in at least weekly contact. And it grew to about 12 people, 15 people. And there'd be like the local lit chair for LA, and local lit chair for San Francisco, local lit chair for Philadelphia, and so on. And then by staying in touch with them, another thing we did was put out a monthly letter about the World Lit Committee and how it was doing and what was happening. And, you know, like when we were having trouble getting the minutes, I'd say, well, Cliff hadn't sent them, but he's going to, you know. And then I put in there, well, Cliff sent them, but we can't make them out, and they ain't typed yet. And then that's the phone calls that we used to decide to make it a handbook instead of minutes, because we had our own internal communications like that. And then I would call them and read the World Lit letter to them and say, if you catch anything, it ought to be in here. You let me know, and I'll read slow. Just stop me when you want to. So then I'd read along a little bit, and they'd stop me, and they'd say, well, you didn't mention so-and-so. So I'd write down exactly what they said, the way they said it, and it'd be in there in the next World Lit letter in their own words. And when they saw their own words in the World Lit letter, then they trusted me. Because before it was that standoff, like, you know, sure, I'm going to give you the money, you're going to bring back the dope, right? And they'd be real nice, but it was very superficial. But, like, what came across from my side was, like, when I put their words into the letter, then they trusted me. Because, you know, it's these silly tests we'd run on each other, see if we're for real. Right, Egon? But anyway, you all want to take a break? I mean, I've been talking for some time. I see people having to go to the bathroom, or else they're disgusted or something. So, I mean, I don't want anybody sitting here in agony, like wondering when. You want to take like a 5-minute break or something? Yeah, keep it short. Or whatever, and somebody misses this part, then they'll just get the tape, I reckon. It's inevitable that, you know, I've passed over some things, and I'm going to pass over some things, but I've already been told by at least one person that things are coming out that they haven't heard before, so I'm going to keep doing it this way. If it's, I guess it's okay, and maybe we can get to questions and answers too. So we were at Lincoln, Nebraska. The year was 1980. 80? Yeah, because my first conference was 79, and that's when World Convention was in Atlanta. So this was a year later, so it had to be in 80. Okay, and it's in the fall because it's after World Convention, which means it's in September. And it's pretty high energy because some of the people who were at Wichita are back for Lincoln. By now, there are some local lit committees who've been using the new approved handbook for NA lit committees. And the dream of Basic Texts and Archaic Anonymous is taking on like a new real dimension, you know, where it was two dimensions before, now it's growing into three dimensions. And plus they've had a half a week at the World Convention to like really get hot, you know, to do it. And so we're up there in Lincoln, and a couple of notable things happened. One's not in this story, the Basic Text, yet, because I really, I may be a whore in ways, but I'm not a whore when it comes to the fellowship, and I don't like to put things in just for like their emotional appeal or something. But everybody tells me that we should put it in, that the members in Lincoln, Nebraska gave blood to raise money for the to host their lit conference, and that probably should be in there. Another thing that touched me particularly was this one guy who looked kind of like an out-of-work truck driver, was really a cowboy from the North Platte, and he had gotten strung out in World War II. And World War, you know, like in Europe, and so he couldn't write, he couldn't read or write. So this girl sat down with him and took down his story. And I thought it was really neat that we had such a group of people together to where we could include people like that. And then I remember also sitting, because we'd, you know. This, if all you think World Lit Committee was a committee, you're missing it. Because like a lot of things in the fellowship, it was like tongue in cheek, like how many people have a secretary at their home group who can take shorthand? And how often does the chair necessarily chair the meeting the way a corporate board director's chair would chair their meeting? And so, but we have to call it something, so the label secretary stuck and chair stuck and so on, you know. And elect the treasurer to take care of the $50 cash flow. And so we had this committee, but in years since this time, I realized it wasn't really a committee. It was a spiritual service body, a collection of members absolutely dedicated to the goal of a basic text for their fellowship. And these people had years to work at it. We had some time to make our small mistakes on a small scale. Like one time we mailed out a world-lit mailing with Narcotics Anonymous on the outside of the envelope. And we didn't do it to be mean. We were that dumb, and also it had been donated printing, and it was in a hurry, and we wanted to get the mailing out. You get it? And, I mean, every time we screw something up, man, we should get a subsidy or something from the phone company, because, I mean, you could just imagine all the red lights going off. And Yes, we know about that. Yes, that's right. No, it'll never happen again. As far as it did happen again, but we didn't do it. And so anyway, we didn't have any approved guidelines, and that's an example. Just so, but we knuckled under instantly, and we were true to our word, and never did it again. And I guess that's the way you have to do in service. But anyway, I'm just trying to stress on you, the people who showed up at Lincoln were not like newcomers to World Lit anymore. Some of them had attended the World Service Conference in 79, the World Lit Conference in Wichita in 79. And they had been working in local lit committees for months, 6 months or a year maybe. And they had written material. They had written their story perhaps by this point. So by the time they got to Lincoln, they weren't going there on this like big what if deal, you know. Plus the committee had now like 800 pages of input. And like, you know, my good old buddy Doug said in his letter, some of it was rather rough, but we treasured all of it. And it was certainly evidence that Radics in Recovery could write. And, of course, that's the lie that was going down, was that we couldn't. And it's funny, I've heard it said that America is unique out of all nations because you can go out on a street corner in America and take a dozen unemployed fools sitting around and say, come on, let's build a bridge, I'll pay you. And they'll say, oh, okay. It doesn't matter what city, what corner, what 12 guys, or gals even. They'll get on the truck, and as long as you have the building materials and the money to pay them, they will build a bridge. One of them will know something about blueprints. One of them's laid brick before. One of them knows how to work iron. And between them, because they're American, they'll figure out the damn way to build that bridge. Now, it may not be the best bridge, but, you know, it's just an attitude. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, the cultural diet, the TV, the magazines, the reading, our attitudes, our conversations, our friends, our travels, the jobs that we work. So anyway, all these people that were attracted from the young and growing NA fellowship to literature, and some of them had had a while to think about it and kind of gear up and learn to type or whatever, they showed up. And again, the question was, well, now we're here, what are we going to do? So we went around the table, we heard from everybody. See, that wasn't just to hear from everybody. That's important enough all by itself. But that's something we did to make sure everybody there knew that they were welcome and appreciated, and to deal them in. And it, like, made a circle of us, okay? In other words, it wasn't just a few important ones over here that got to talk, and you guys keep your fucking mouth shut. It's like everybody was important, and everybody had an equal say and an equal chance to say it. And it didn't matter whether you had 40 years clean time or 4 days. And we literally had people in our lit conferences one day clean. And I remember this little 16-year-old down in Memphis. She had to sit on about 5 or 6 phone books to get her ass up high enough to reach the typewriter keys. She could type like a mad woman. And it's good typing, too, but she was just small. So anyway, Greg was there, Bob Barrett was there. I'll give you one other little idea about why this was not a quote-unquote real committee. It was really a spiritual service body. Like, this guy was sitting next to me, and, you know, I'm there and, like, starting to get a little excited, and she's like, you can just tell she's not real comfortable, you know. It didn't look like she needed to go to the bathroom. So I said, have you ever said the lit prayer? And she says, what's that? And I said, well, you know, that's where you pray for God to remove your ego and give you the strength and guidance to do his footwork and all like that. Have you? No, are you supposed to? And she says, oh, to sit in this room, you better, because you being here with your ego, you're liable to blow up. And she said, maybe that's what's happening to me. I said, go out in the hall, take a few minutes, get with your God, say that prayer, and come back. I mean, 5 minutes later, here she is. You know, world-lit worker. She's throwing her hands up and editing and doing all the stuff, you know. Just come alive. And I guess everybody there did something like that, you know, to where their ego was no longer a question, and they were comfortable with their qualifications for NA membership, meaning, you know, they'd made a mess of their lives and everything they'd touched had gone wrong, more or less. And they were surrendered and had that spirit and that unity. I said in the break to somebody outside, well, we were so lucky. I mean, we had the basic text for a project to write on. Everybody supported it. Everybody was interested in seeing it for various reasons. But it was just total, absolute unity. The service branches, World Service Conferences for it. So was the World Service Board of Trustees. So was WSO. Everybody helped us. Everybody liked us. Everybody loved us. And that's how it went in the early days. So one idea had been proposed, and Greg had mentioned it to me, and he pitched the group with it, and that was to make a topic outline based on the white booklet, because everybody knew that most of the points were covered, even if they weren't elaborated on sufficiently. And then from that topic outline, we'd plug in the input and then see if we could figure out a way to get it from raw input into something to where all the material would be in like this chapter in a certain basic order, and then we'd worry about getting it to read more smoothly and so on, and cover any other points that came up. So that's what we started doing, and just, you know, Greg pulled out the chalk and the blackboard and just went to work, and he had been working for a corporation making polyurethane, and to keep his workers alive and awake, they sent him to a lot of, like, corporate schools for this and that, and so he was just, like, used to doing it, and just had a real good style of delivery, and just like, okay, folks, we're going to do it now, and, you know, okay, here's the first chapter. And hell, you know, nothing but believers in the room, chugga, chugga, chug. We wrote the topic outline, then the second chapter, then the third chapter. You know, who is an addict? What is NA? What should be in there? And so then we had the real, this was the crux, ladies and gentlemen. We're fixing the crossover from the period of time during which we had no book until the baby, you could see it, little head sticking out. Okay? It was not too pretty, but it was at least a baby, and it was there. And, you know, like a lot of babies, it had some promise. So, and people would love it and bring it up. So, so we took the pieces of paper, and where an item of input seemed to belong in different places within this topic outline, we had it typed and photocopies made so everybody had a copy of it. Then we would say, well, the item in the stack of photocopies I've got, this belongs in chapter 1, B3. So you write that on the little piece of paper, like throw it in the basket. Then those are all sorted where all the chapter 1s are one pile, all the chapter 2s are another pile. And it still seems incredible, even to me, and I'm a believer and a witness, that we were able to do it that way. But then we took all the, you know, took a break, lunch, come back. Then we took all the pile of paper for chapter 1, according to this topic outline. Because the important point to us, you know, and don't miss this very, very important point, a lot of people unfortunately miss this very important point, is every scrap of paper in that pile is potentially the key to somebody's life in recovery. So we took every scrap very seriously. Nothing was wasted. So anyway, but, you know, physically and socially and emotionally and mentally, how do you get all this, like, transposed? Well, everybody would take a little stack, and we'd go to the first item on the topic outline. Everybody would just keep looking through their stack, and we'd keep going until everything was used, right? Okay, so it didn't matter where we started or where we finished, because everything was going to be used somewhere. But getting it started was just like getting to the top of this great big hill, and then you got quite enough energy just to flop over the top. And so it's like I was there, you know, and like I'd prayed and all that, and I was real jacked up, you know, and hoping we'd get a book. And I said, come on, who's got that first one? Come on, you know, plug it in, man. You looking at it? Does it speak to you? Let me hear you. And, you know, and people's going like, oh! And everybody go, is that it? Nah, that ain't it. Somebody else said, I got one. Read it out. They'd read it out. And hell, the first one was pain is our common denominator. And everybody says, yeah. And we was on to the next item, you know. And we like paste that at the top of a blank sheet of paper, and the next one, the next one, the next one. Went through that chapter, all the other chapters. I mean, this took a lot of faith. And days later, you know, we had, oh man, that was another thing, Time Warp, spiritual service body. Usually a day has 24 hours in it. sometimes you watch science fiction movies and Star Trek heroes want to get from one galaxy to another, so they like go into what's called warp factors. Well, man, I mean, like, you know, we sort of start out kind of like we're doing here. But what if the next thing we were going to do is, okay, now later tonight, you know, we're going to start working. And we got the files in this day and age. We got the computers, spell checkers, grammarians. And, I mean, you know, like after two or three days, everybody knows what the goal is and everybody knows what the resources are and everybody's got total information access. Everybody knows what's going on. Any question is answered that fast about anybody else. So none of that's like held to control you. None of that's held back. And so everybody knows everything. Well, you know the term a mile a minute? I mean, some of our hours were like days. We would get so much done. I mean, it would just leave you with this like odd sort of blasted feeling like, and you know, every now and then it would creep up on you, like give you the willies. Is this really happening? Is it okay? Because God was using the group as an instrument to answer all the prayers. And we got to be there, and it was just great to see God doing all this neat stuff. And we just were sort of bewildered, but, you know, we were happy to do our part and stay in place. And so then we had the humorous job of taking this cut-and-pasted material without computers. We literally went down to this office supply store and said, we need some paste. No, I think we're going to need a little more than that. We need some scissors. They bring out these $7 or $8 like shears, you know. Have you got anything a little cheaper? We get these little toy tape, you know, children's pills, man. Like, you know, like ends blended where you can't stab fellow students or even yourself. So we cut and pasted all right. And so anyway, between input one and input two, pains our common denominator in the next sentence, whatever it is. Okay, we're going to keep the content meaning and all the wording possible, but can we get these two or three sentences to line up and kind of flow from one to the other? So by now we had 20 to 30 people all homed in on this one topic, brainstorming. And they would suggest a couple of versions, and with increasing ability, they would hit on a combination that would include all the thoughts, words, ideas in those sentences or two, but it would read better. And then this was all written in, the bridge sentences sometimes were written in pencil. All this rough cut and paste with marks went to typing. And we gave the typist the liberty to, you know, help it make sense, Mary. And she would, you know. And if you're uncomfortable about something, either leave it out or ask somebody. And that was a good way, because everything was included. And so we would get like a rough typing of chapter one, and then a rough typing of chapter two, and chapter three, and so on. And not all the chapters got done that way, but enough of them did. Like chapter one got done that way. And maybe two, I don't know. Okay. And it just, you know, it's like the time warp slowed down on Sunday, and everybody sat at the table, and we said, look, we got much more done than we thought we would. Look, the basic text has come to reality. Here it is on the table in front of you. Y'all going to take copies of it home. We had the copies in the typewriters this time, and they took their minutes home with them. And I think, or else we got them out pretty quick. That conference, or the next conference, we stopped the business about we'll send the copies to you shortly. Our style of conference, we would take the minutes as it was happening, and as a page of minutes was taken, it would go away to typing. When you got back from lunch, you'd get your morning minutes in your hands. And then we had these cute people who'd say, oh, no, that's impossible. You couldn't possibly do that at one of these. And we just did it. And, you know, I think I tried to be nice to him. I said, well, we know it's hard and all that, and we probably won't be able to do it all the way through the conference. We're going to do it just for the day. You know, we'll do it for just this little part of it, okay? And that seemed to satisfy him, but hell, we was like, you know, he was ready to eat iron. We did them every damn time. And there was never any yelling or any pressure or any extra effort. I mean, everybody knew. And nobody would even think of being mean to somebody else. And, you know, there's just that kind of spirit. So, anyway, we knew we weren't done. We'd gotten a lot done, but we weren't all done. And we discovered some of the potentials. And, like, it's just, you know, we're going to have another conference. Oh, my God, we're going to wait until May, and then they're going to schedule one September. That's a year from now. A year? Is there anything good we can be doing in the next year while we're waiting to finish what we're doing right now and in the middle of and feel like going on with? None of us could think of anything. So we did the old damn faith bit and just planned another conference, another World Lit conference before the World Service conference. I hope they understand. Some of them didn't. So we went on home, hugged and all that, took some pictures, went on home. And the next conference site was Memphis, Tennessee. And we still never did get the IPs that we were supposed to mail out, but the policy item that we were supposed to mail out our review pieces was in place. The committee was, including raising all the money to get the to mail them out. That was, and you have to understand how small these conference committees were in those days. None of them had any money. I'd spend $200 or $300 out of my pocket and then wait 2 or 3 months or 6 months to get it back. When I was in L.A. next and could physically show them my receipts. But, so mailing out much of anything was quite a problem. And, I'm not saying that there was like people in L.A. that were like holding the money strings. I mean, there was like no conference committee got any money because it just hadn't been done yet. It was just like all the damn bumps and grinds of getting something started. And there was no procedure for the treasurer exactly to reimburse chairs of WC subcoms, even though they were supposed to do it. It wasn't clear when and how. So it kind of hamstrung us financially. Anyway, so we planned Memphis. Everybody got their minutes from Lincoln. They got the edits from Lincoln. Any other photocopies they wanted. I don't think we charged them for photocopies in those days. We figured if they paid their money to travel and get here, whether it was across the country or across town, and they paid the $12-$15 registration fee, then part of the deal ought to be is they can make some copies on their photocopier at their conference. It being, since it's theirs, and we felt like it would be irresponsible to deny members the right to use their stuff. And also, see, they would have felt this wall go up between us and them. And we didn't want no us and them, so we one way of keeping that down was to give things freely. Of course, we received pretty freely, too, you know. Good thing we did. And so we planned this lit conference, and we know how many days we had at Lincoln, and we know it started Tuesday to go to Sunday, but it didn't start accelerating and going to this, like, acceleration thing until about Wednesday. But then we did 2 or 3 weeks' work in the next 3 days. And we figured Memphis could be like that, but it might, even at that accelerated pace, it might take more than 3 or 4 days. So by the time we got all finished with planning and talking and considering, it turned into a 9-day literature conference. 24 hours a day. The site turned out to be Memphis State University. 100 people showed up, 25 or so had showed up for Lincoln. I think it was like 80, 90, maybe a little bit under 100. They worked usually 18 or 20 hours a day. Now, somebody do your math right quick. How many thousands of hours did we put in that week? We didn't